North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Morning. You've tuned in for North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack.
And we are just the two of us this morning in the studio. We will be joined next Wednesday. Little programming note: on Wednesday morning, Zach Hagedon will be here. That is the day after the primary election. We'll be breaking down the results at that time, and then I do expect to have a journalist in next week to talk about other local stories. But right now, it's just us. And I have a short list of headlines, but this week in particular, I think I will actually go ahead and do a brief weather report.
Well, go for it, because the weather is of prime interest with Lost in the 50s happening this weekend.
Just what I was thinking, yes. A lot of people going to be planning to be out and about, and they'll be interested to know. Right now it's clear and in the low 50s, but there is a 70% chance of showers today, and it will likely be breezy. The high only about 59 degrees. Possibly a thunderstorm, but that will be earlier in the day. And then after that, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly between 1 and 5. That means, hopefully, that the parade will be, you know, outside of that rain window, but we'll see. Clearing up tonight and just partly cloudy, but chilly, low down to 38, a high of 60 degrees tomorrow, and a 50% chance of showers tomorrow. The low overnight, 39 again, and a 50% chance of showers on Saturday night, and then an 80% chance of showers on Sunday with a high of 55 degrees. So kind of a rainy and chilly weekend, but not like not all day rain, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah, so we might, or the event might get away there with a decent sort of day, but I tell you, It's kind of a shame that we couldn't move a couple of days of that terrific weather we've had this past week to this weekend.
Just, I know, yeah.
And I'm somebody that actually likes the rain, but
but just yeah, just not just when
at the
there's
right
a parade
places,
going
at the right
on.
Time. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Outside of the weather, and we can talk more about what's coming up in Lost in the 50s, because both of our or all of our local publications had a little piece on Lost in the 50s too, but. One particular note, Albany Falls Dam is still under repair. What this means is that the lake level will remain low at about the current level expected until late May. So where it is right now is going to hold for at least a couple of weeks, it looks like.
It is about 2055 feet of elevation, which is about 7 feet below normal full summer pool.
Yeah.
Just for the record there.
And it is, it's, if you've been down to the beach, it's noticeably lower. Mm-hmm. The Selkirk JPA, the Joint Powers Agreement, has selected Jeff Armstrong as their new fire chief. This is in the wake of Sandpoint leaving the Selkirk JPA, but they do have a new fire chief in place. At the Bonner County Commission, there was some conflict between Commissioners Ahmet and Williams around open meeting laws and ultimately the First Amendment when Ahmet, who is the chair of the commission, removed three items from the agenda, which had been placed there by Commissioner Williams. She disputed his right to do that, and it broke down into a rather fraught conversation, I guess. Here in Sandpoint, some good news, at least for one resident, $2 million Powerball ticket was won. Somebody bought the ticket over at Arnie's, Arnie's Gas.
Yeah, in Kootenai.
Yeah. And I have here a update on the Russell Sports Complex, which residents will be interested to hear, I think, if you're aware of what's going on out at Traverse Park and that rather dramatic construction that's going on. Here's what we know. There was an update at the top of the council meeting on Wednesday. Legacy Building Solutions has completed construction of the building and is moving on to interior finishing, like the lobby and restrooms, etc. Then there will be exterior finishing, including the addition of a 40-foot steel awning. And Dreamland Skate Park will be breaking ground on phase two of the skate park on May 28th. And let's see, bids close at the end of the month on the playground and splash pad, and then hoping to bring construction to begin over the summer. And there you go.
So Traverse Park is going to see a lot of construction activity.
Continuing construction activity, yeah. Yes. But it looks like they've the exterior structure of that building looks like it is complete, and now they're finishing the interior and then exterior trim.
So, Jack, you go by that building every day.
I sure do.
To and from town. And, it, of course, the first reaction is, dang, that thing is big. Is it kind of becoming more custom, like part of the skyline now for you?
I suppose, yeah, I suppose it is. Mm-hmm. It was, especially with how quickly it came up, it was dramatic when it appeared, sort of the like the monolith from 2001, just bang, here mm-hmm. it is. Now it's, yeah, I would say I'm getting used to it. It kind of blends into the mountainous terrain behind it, so... Mm-hmm.
The fields are getting a lot of use right now. I don't know if you've spotted that.
Oh, but definitely.
There's been a lot of games going on. The parking lot's been full.
Between
full to overflowing, yeah.
Yeah, lacrosse, baseball, soccer, the SSA, Sandpoint Soccer Association. The park is by no means closed, even as construction goes on. Mm. There's been lots of use out there.
Well, I'll mention a couple other things that caught my eye this week. Jerry Kramer is having a book signing at Vanderford's. Of course, he is the Hall of Fame football player who attended Sandpoint High School in 1958. So he graduated a long time ago, but he had a huge career with the Green Bay Packers, won 5 national championships. He's kind of spanned that era before the Super Bowl, right up. I think they won one or two of the early, very first Super Bowls when he was with the Green Bay. He'll be in town on Saturday doing a book signing from 11 to 1 at Vanderford's. Just throwing that shout out there because he is such a big figure in coming out of this little mm-hmm. town of ours. Another thing that people might want to keep an eye on is that the city parking lot between 2nd and 3rd Avenues is being eyed for changes. They're under discussion with the city, and one of those proposals that's being weighed, no decisions, just being discussed, is the possibility that might go to paid parking.
Mm-hmm. Which right now there's no paid parking parking meters. Anywhere in town.
Yeah.
The downtown parking, which is time limited, is free as long as you move your car within 2 or 3 hours.
Right. Yeah. So, would be a pretty big sea change for the whole parking paradigm we have downtown. I'm sure that would be heavily debated before any decisions are made. And of course, the biggest thing coming up this week, let's talk about that before we might talk about other things, mm-hmm. and that is the election.
This is the biggest thing coming up. It's kind of what all the, it seems like everybody's kind of waiting with bated breath to see what happens. And perhaps that's why there's not too much action going on elsewhere in the newspaper right now. What's going to come from the May 21st primary? Obviously, coverage in the B has continued. There's a big spread in this week's Reader with some interesting statistics, especially about the financial side of the race. It does look like at the final in the final analysis, Jim Woodward and Scott Herndon are 1-2 statewide.
Statewide, yeah. And we had Zach in last week from Zach from the Reader, and he was telling us that during a one of the annual meetings of the journalists down in Boise, that was all the talk, was this race, because it's being most closely watched in the state. And I think that fundraising there is indicative of that. And just for the record, as reported in the Reader this week, the Senate candidate Jim Woodward has raised $128,772. The incumbent Scott Herndon has raised $110,864 as of the latest May 15th campaign contribution report. So those are big numbers. For if you've wondered why you're getting so much stuff in the mail.
That's right. Especially, I mean, consider we don't have a local TV station, you know, to buy television ads on.
So it's the local newspaper advertising, radio advertising, and of course, a ton of mailers is what
seems to be the thing. Yeah.
The other local races are interesting as well. And, you know, we're at that point, elections coming Tuesday, you're wondering, well, who's winning these horse races? It's a lot of speculation. And, I mean, how can you judge that? We don't have any real polling. You see signs up all around town, and you kind of think, well, if I see more signs, maybe that means that candidate is doing better. But I don't think that's a very reliable indicator. Another indicator might be how they're doing with fundraising. That's not any indication who's going to really win either. But in these local races for legislature, Mark Sauter has raised $37,836. He has two opponents in the Republican primary, Spencer Hutchings, who has raised $10,669, and Jane Sauter, who's raised $8,235. So Mark Sauter, the incumbent there, has handily outraised his opponents. There is a Democrat in that race, Karen Matthey. She's raised $62,29.
That's right. But she has raised that amount thus far. But of course, she won't face an opponent for the primary.
She's not opposed in the primary. Yeah. So that money will presumably get used for the general election.
Right.
She's the Democrat. Yeah.
It's a blowout in House 1B, the Democratic side of the column. Catherine Larson has raised $10,066.27. And according to reporting, Bob Vicarious has raised $0.
That's the Democratic candidates. Yeah.
On the Republican side, Cornell Razor has raised $26,132. And Chuck Lohman has raised about $10,000. $907 for House seat 1B on the Republican side of the race. Mm-hmm. The county commissioner races looks like they are also expensive this year, or in that same range as the House seat races are. Brian Domke has raised about $19,000. Brian Riley has raised around $7,000, closer to seven than six.
And James Burroughs, who's also a Republican candidate, has reported raising zero. He's one that has not shown up at forums, hasn't really participated in a lot of the coverage. Hard to tell if he's making a serious run at it, but he's reporting no money raised.
Yeah. You did not I guess this is a good time to mention, good as any, that our local decision series has been airing mostly on Wednesdays and occasionally on Mondays with all these races that we've had. And all of the audio is available on our website. Scroll down just past that headline top of the page, and you can find a link to every single conversation we had with every candidate.
And we did cover all the contested races. All the candidates participated except James Burroughs. He's the only one out of all the races that we don't even know if we were successful in getting a hold of him. We tried emailing and calling with no response. But as you say, we do have all the candidates' interviews up there. It's really very illuminating. If you are wondering how you're going to vote still, I think most people at this point have probably got their minds made up. But if it's a coin flip for any of these races, do go to KRFY.org. Scroll down the page, scroll down the homepage, and you'll see the complete list and links to all the interviews there. We also have an interesting race for Bonner County Commissioner, District 3 race, and we have three candidates there. And here, Ron Korn has raised $17,718 to Luke Ahmet. Luke, being the incumbent, has raised $8,490. And then there's a third candidate there, Dmitry Borisov, who's raised $7,760. So in that race, we do have a candidates who raised substantially more than the others.
That's right. And interesting that the incumbent did not raise the most amount of money and was outraised to the tune of about $5,000 by his opponent, Ron Korn. Mm-hmm. That three-way race will be kind of interesting to see how it splits up, because it seems to me possible that the incumbent will get a certain percentage of the vote, and then his opposition will split the remainder, and Luke will hold his seat, but also it might not go that way. We don't have any polling to really indicate.
Yeah.
The Bonner County Sheriff's race, this reporting is interesting to me. It indicates that the incumbent, Daryl Wheeler, raised $9,920, just shy of $10,000 for his campaign, while his opponent, Steve Bradshaw, who is a sitting county commissioner, vacating his seat and intending to become the sheriff, Steve Bradshaw reports raising $0 for this campaign. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So to reiterate, Election Day is Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, May 21st. You can actually still today engage in early voting. If you go to the county elections office on Highway 2 till 5 p.m., you could vote early. Otherwise, you have to wait till Election Day. Polls on Election Day are open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. If you're not sure where your precinct is, you can get a ton of information. Actually, we have links on KRFY.org to the Sandpoint Online Elections pages, which gives a list of all the polling places. You can also use a tool at voteidaho.gov that will tell you where your precinct is and where you should be voting. Voteidaho.gov is an excellent resource to just check on your registration and make sure what your party affiliation is if you're not sure of that. If you are currently not registered, or if you are registered as unaffiliated, you may both register at your polling place on Election Day, and you may declare party affiliation at your polling place when you're voting. If you are already affiliated, you can't change your party affiliation at this point. But if you're not, or if you're an independent or unaffiliated, then you can declare a party affiliation. And I bring that up because you can also see sample ballots, by the way, if you go to Sandpoint Online Elections. There's sample ballots, so you can see who's going to be on the ballot in your precinct and by party. And if you take a look at those sample ballots, you'll see that there's a lot more things to vote on in the Republican ballot than there are in the Democratic ballots or the other two. There's also a Constitution and Libertarian ballots where they well, actually, they have ballots for them, even though there aren't any candidates, because there are precinct committee persons to vote for.
Right, and those are in the Republican side. On the Republican side of the ballot, there's some hotly contested precinct seats. In fact, Herndon and Woodward, opposing each other in the race for Senate, are also opposing each other for precinct captain
in their Sagal precinct.
In their Sagal precinct, they're neighbors. So it's possible that whoever wins the one may or may not win the other. Herndon is currently, as precinct captain, that allows him to be the chair of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee. And that organization has become more active in recent years, and including under his leadership there. So it would be a change if he were to lose the race for precinct captain one way or another, even whether or not he wins the race for Idaho Senate.
I'll make a prediction on that one. That whoever wins the Senate seat is going to win the precinct spot as well. So that's my bold prediction. You can hold me to it on Wednesday.
We'll see. I don't know. We'll find out. I hold in my hands another publication. Sometimes perhaps we forget that there's more than just the Sandpoint Reader and the Bonner County Daily Bee published in Sandpoint. There is also a biannual magazine called Sandpoint Magazine. And I hold in my hand the summer 2024 issue, which drops, correct me if I'm wrong, today?
Today. It's out there being distributed right now.
Okay.
And I should say that's my day job. Mm-hmm. I'm a publisher of Sandpoint Magazine. So a little apparent conflict of interest there. If you want to check it out, you'll see it starting this right now, this morning. They're out doing deliveries at the grocery stores. It actually takes a good full week to get full distribution out because we print 25,000 copies and it's distributed during the course of the whole summer. But if you look for the magazine with a gorgeous waterfall on the cover, that's the new issue of Sandpoint Magazine. It's just out today.
We have in here, it looks like you've got this issue is focused on waters. Water and natural waterways, including Sand Creek's hidden treasures and our area waterfalls, and then of course the lake itself.
Places to swim. There's a great essay in there by Amy Midstoke, who's one of our star writers, not just for Sandpoint Magazine, but she's author of the book All the Things. She's a prolific columnist for The Spokesman. She contributes to The Reader occasionally. She's got a great story in there about the whole joys of swimming in the summer. And we give a little map of developed swimming places. You know, we've really become more cognizant that locals don't like us. I'm being a local too. There are places I don't put in this magazine because I say, hey, I don't want it to be overrun. We were cognizant of that about listing swimming places. We only put developed swimming locations so that folks that are looking for great places to swim can find those at current, you know, developed sites like City Beach. But we encourage others that want to get out there a little bit more to go explore and find their own secret swimming spots because there's a ton of them.
I'm going to flip through there. You do have some things about you're covering the housing scene in the area, which in years past has also been a political talking point and was mentioned at the forum, particularly on the county. Amongst the county commissioners' races, there was some talk of the housing situation in Bonner County, which we all know is rather expensive and perceived as unaffordable to a lot of kind of entry level new homeowners or working families. But there is a several pieces in here, kind of on that subject.
And kind of the big stories by Sandy Compton. He's another fine writer we have here locally, and talking about the fact that we have a whole bunch of new apartment developments that are coming online now, and it's kind of been a little bit atypical for apartment living as being part of the lifestyle here. But with the way the housing prices are now, apartment living is a great way to go for a lot of working families. So there are a whole bunch of hundreds. By some count, there's anywhere like 469, another 279 condo multifamily units that are in planned in the planning phase right now. So there's about 800 apartment units that are going to be coming online in the very near future, and that's going to definitely help with our housing situation. And that's one of the stories in the Sandpoint magazine this time.
Okay. You can look for that on, I guess, on newsstands everywhere. Mostly you've got it in grocery stores. You've got it in
shops and cafes. And the Chamber is a good place to pick it up. Cedar Street Bridge will probably have it. So, you can find that all around town. And I did want to mention one other thing that's going on right now. The Sandpoint Reader with Sandpoint Online has been started in 2015. So it's actually in the 10th year, doing a local media survey. and the idea there is to see what the reading habits, and not just the reading habits, but the media habits of local people are, and use that information to help make these media products more responsive to what the trends are showing, as well as where people are seeing that, you know, the media should be doing better here. And again, declare a conflict of interest here because I'm involved with Sandpoint Online, but that media survey is underway right now. It's going to go for a couple of weeks. You can find that on the Sandpoint Reader website, Sandpoint Online website. I just posted it to the KRFY website. Jack, you may have spotted that. There's a link to it there. Or you could go to it directly. I give you that URL here if I can pick that up real quick.
Yeah, look it up. I would just say that we don't have the Nielsen company coming here, and there is no way of really tracking who's listening or who's paying attention to what, especially here at the radio station. We don't know how many people listen other than through polls.
And so it's helpful if our listeners here to KRFY will go to the media survey and say, yeah, I listen to KRFY, and that provides good information for us. The link is bit.ly/ Sandpoint Media Survey -2024. But again, go to KRFY.org, a lot shorter thing to type in, and you'll see a link to it there.
I was just going to see if I could find, and I don't think I can. I will be interested to see how things break down at the county clerk's office on Tuesday, how the things are divided between people who vote on Election Day and people who vote absentee in advance. That seems like that number has been going up lately, especially since COVID. It seems like more absentee ballots are coming in, or
early voting is definitely happening at a much larger number than was pre-COVID.
Right.
People found that it's kind of convenient to be able to vote when they just have a spot of time. They can run by the county election office and just vote there.
I myself prefer to vote on Election Day.
And I shall vote on Election Day.
Yeah, I like to go and see what's going on at the polling place.
Yeah, it's just kind of part of the tradition, right?
Yep, exactly. We'll go there. And then actually at about 8 o'clock when the polls close on Tuesday evening, I shall be here in the studio. And as results come in, I'll be glad to make announcements to our listeners. So tune in to KRFY. Just enjoy the regular music programming, and every so often, probably right after 8 o'clock, usually the absentee ballots and early voting come in very quickly, and then it'll be usually half hour, 45 minutes before we get any.
They report them as the precincts bring them in. Some precincts are got a lot of votes to count. It takes them a long time to get them in. So I imagine we won't really see the final results until after midnight.
Yeah.
However, I will say that early voting can be kind of deceptive.
Yeah, very.
That first tranche of voting you see is all the early voting ballots that have been counted, and sometimes candidates inspire early voting, and they, it looks like they have a big lead, and it just evaporates over the course of the night as more precincts report.
Yeah, and the ballots are carried. They're not transmitted electronically. They are brought from the polling place to the county clerk's office, and what that means is that with all polls closing at 8 o'clock, the ones further away from the polling place or from the county clerk's office get there later.
Lake or Priest River, Clark Fork, those guys, even though they're less populated, they not only do they have to count everything up, they got to carry those ballots to the elections office. So a lot of excitement there. Lost in the 50s this weekend. It's going to be an interesting week.
It will be an interesting week. We'll be here on Tuesday night, and then also, like I said, on Wednesday morning, breaking things down. Thanks for joining us for North Idaho News of the Week. With that, I think that's it, Chris.
Yep.
Okay, Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long right here on 88.5 KRFY.